I speak to you in the name of one God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer. Amen. A few weeks ago on Halloween, Reverend Josh came into the office dressed as Mr. Rogers. He had on a white button-down shirt and tie and a very comfortable-looking sweater cardigan. And yes, he even had a Daniel the Tiger puppet with him to complete the outfit. Well done, Reverend Josh. It was an incredible costume. And ever since then, I've been thinking about one of my absolute favorite Mr. Rogers quotes, which is this: "The greatest thing that we can do is to let people know they are loved and capable of loving. The greatest thing that we can do is to let people know they are loved and capable of loving." And I like this quote so much because I think it reminds us who and what we really are. It reminds us that at the core of each and every one of us is God's selfless love waiting to spill out into the world. The parable we hear this morning tells us that we are to share this love generously and abundantly. Today, we hear the parable of a wealthy man who, before going away on a long journey, distributes his money to three servants. The first and second servant take the high-risk route. They invest their master's money, and they both do really well. The third servant is much more careful and cautious. He digs a hole, puts the money in the ground, and keeps it there for safekeeping until his master's return. And for this, he's treated as harshly as anyone in the Bible that I'm aware of. And the first two servants are lauded and celebrated by their master. Now, the significance of this passage is revealed when we look at where it's placed in Matthew's gospel. This parable is the third of four stories that span two chapters in Matthew's gospel, where Jesus is talking all about the end times, the eschaton. In all four of these stories, and we heard Reverend Dinah preach wonderfully on one of these stories just last week, but all four of these stories involve the return of some sort of master or king, the judgments that come with this return, and how those who await the return spend their time. So with this knowledge, we can begin to understand that viewing this story as one that promotes capitalistic ventures or being slick and doubling your money or economic prosperity misses the point. Rather, this parable, like the other three parables that it's lumped together with, is meant to emphasize how Jesus' followers are supposed to live in his absence. Jesus uses this parable to communicate to his followers that they have been entrusted with the gifts that they'll need to do things in this world that will be transformative. Rather than burying their heads in the sand, they are to be bold, to take risks, and to emulate God's life-giving work. They are to reflect the act of self-giving love that brought all of us here in the first place. Jesus shows them what this self-giving love looks like. He teaches them that they are to carry on with the blessed are statements that Jesus outlines in the Beatitudes earlier in Matthew's gospel. They are to do things like feed the hungry, visit the sick and imprisoned, welcome the stranger, clothe the naked. The traditional interpretation of this parable is one in which Jesus encourages us, his followers, to engage in the work he entrusts to us, not to bury it in the ground. As the parable tells us, when we opt to play it safe with the gifts that have been entrusted to us, when we don't care, when we don't love passionately, or don't invest in making this world a more equitable place, Jesus warns us that this is something akin to death. It's like being banished in the outer darkness. It turns out that the greatest risk of all is not to risk anything, not to give our hearts away in love. But there's another aspect of this parable that strikes me and that I think is worth paying attention to. We hear at the beginning of this parable that the master entrusts each of his servants with a very generous amount of money. You might recall that one talent equaled 15 years worth of labor during this time in history. Now, whether you've been given five talents or two talents or one talent, you have been entrusted with a huge amount of money. One Episcopal priest wrote that would be like if Warren Buffett called three people from his grounds crew into his office and said, here's a bazillion for you, a zillion for you, and a billion for you. I'm out of here. You guys keep a look after things for me while I'm gone. You know, what's different about these servants is that the first two seem to pick up on the vibe that the master is putting out there. They understand the graciousness and abundance that they have been bestowed upon them, and they don't hold back in their response. They go out and in that same abundant nature, invest the gift that they have been given in the world around them. The third servant, instead of seeing what's been given to him as a gift from a gracious Lord, responds with fear rather than generosity. So this parable pushes us to wrestle with how we view God. Do we, like the first two servants, see God as grace upon grace, bestowing upon us an abundance of joy and mercy? Or do we, like the third servant, see God as harsh and prone to punishment? And I bring this up because how we view and understand God has a profound impact on how we live and how we face the world around us. If we view God as stern and one who dispenses harsh judgments, we come to believe that everything bad in our lives is punishment from God. And I think this is what happens with the third servant. It's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. In this story, the master becomes the person the servant fears and describes. But we know that the God we see in Jesus is not a harsh God, reaping where he did not sow and gathering where he did not scatter. Rather, the God we see in Jesus is always giving more than is expected or deserved, and who gathers what we offer back in joy and even more abundance. The God who created all things out of infinite love and generosity. The God whose love moves the suns and the stars. The God whose love overflows into all of creation says, here you go. Look after things for me. When we recognize the gift of God's love that brings all things into being and sustains us even now, we are empowered to do the work of God. We are empowered to, as Mr. Rogers might say, let other people know that they are loved and capable of loving. We are empowered to invest our lives in those things that will help us live more fully into the selfless love that is the very core of each and every one of us. Amen.